future. There are no people. There are no people in the future.
No people at all.
There are no people in the future.
Where did all my people go?
There are no people in the future.
Let me try my people call.
Everybody, welcome. Yes, indeed. It is Friday, September 3rd, 2021. Welcome to Raging Chicken's Out to Coop podcast. This is Kevin Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken. And each week I talk to that motherload of middle-aged millennial angst, Sean Kitchen, about the good, the bad, and the ugly in state and national politics. Well, we're streaming live on our YouTube channel. So if you're over there now, smash that subscribe button, like the stream, and hit that bell so you know every time we go live. If you're listening to this on the podcast, you can just click away over to YouTube, right? Make sure you do that. On today's show, well, let's just put it this way. All right, I've had quite a morning already, and this has been an insane week. We're going to a little free-flowing this week, because let's just kind of like do a quick rundown of just some of the things that are going on this week. The Supreme Court basically goes ahead and justifies kind of like abortion bounty hunters and vigilantes in Texas, putting entire Roe v. Wade at stake, right? Well, the TikTokers at least stepped up on that one, at least in part. And Susan Collins, of course, was wrong. Imagine that. There's climate disasters from floods to fires and flip dives. Well, at least in Philly. We got some flip dives, right? And you got phone records of legislators who may actually have abetted the January 6th insurrection. Yep, they're being subpoenaed. We got that going on. And of course, threats to tech companies. And don't you dare, or we're coming for you. From Republicans. And you got Joe Rogan's on the paste. Just like, okay. Closer to Pennsylvania, doesn't get any better. Mike Jones, well, yeah, he finds out, dun-dun-dun, conducting a witch hunt, or maybe a zombie hunt is a more appropriate kind of approach to this. We'll get into that. Sean will have that story. It's freaking amazing. And you got Stephen Lynch and his 20 strong men heading out to school board near you, right? Running for Senate, right, Sean? Senate he's running for. Nothing like freaking...
Governor or...
Or governor?
County Senate? Executive.
County executive. Lynch mob leader. Jesus. And you got Russ Diamond. Hey, you know, you always count on Russ Diamond to make rape jokes. Yep, not lying. You got Governor Wolf finally put in a mask mandate a week too late, but hey, we'll take it. All right, and then we'll also have the Penn Ridge School District, my school districts. They're kind of like off the hook response to Tom Wolf and the mandate. Basically, giving instructions to parents about how to kind of subvert it and go around it. Next week, Cyril's coming back for Out the Coop. For the Wednesday show with Cyril Mikulenko. You know, Cyril's been kind of really busy at work. We had kind of hectic couple weeks, but he'll be back. His latest column is phenomenal. Talk about that. And college and universities pursue magical thinking as a solution to the pandemic. It's a good thing because magical thinking works really well with public relations. Just so you know. And on that score, we'll have a KU update. And one of the reasons why we're kind of a little off today is I spent the morning on an interview with Steve Oros. If you remember last week's show, I kind of introduced a little bit some of the issues. Steve is a faculty member at Kutztown University who had a heart transplant and was being forced to choose between his life and his livelihood. So we had a little interview with Steve this morning, and it freaking, like, it's devastating hearing what the university is doing to him and some other folks. So that will be our Labor Day special show that will get launched on Monday morning. So look forward to that. If you're a patron of the show, if you went to RC, patreon.com/RCPress and became a patron, you're going to get early access to that interview on Monday's interview, probably later today. And then, of course, we'll have our wrap-up last call for whatever else is kind of still hanging out there. We'll see what's going on ahead of this Labor Day weekend. I want to remind you, if you're looking for more Progressive Talk, you tune in to the Rick Smith Show every night on every night on his stream. You can check that out at 9 p.m. every single night, wherever you get your streams. That's Twitter, that's YouTube, that's Facebook, wherever it's going to be. Every Saturday, he's also on Free Speech TV, and he's got his new show on WBAI. You want to tune in to the Rick Smith Show? Well, head on over to thericksmithshow.com and check out the latest schedule for everywhere Rick is. And kind of once you get done watching that, you got to make sure that you listen to this week's episode of the Sisters of the Night Caucus podcast. Yep, you can find that on Anchor, Spotify, iTunes, wherever you get your podcast. Right, the political PA women stirring this cauldron. Oh, boy, man, they rocked the house. This podcast is awesome. And they know where the bodies are buried, so get on over there. Follow them on Twitter at the Night Caucus and subscribe to their podcast. And attention gamers, right? The Game Inn, that's with two N's. The Game Inn is a Quakertown-based black family-owned gaming store. They're friends of the show, and they've got everything from retro N64s to latest consoles, video games for all platforms, collectibles, action figures, Funko Pops, you got it. And look, back to school means that your kid gets an A, they get a discount with the report card. Check out all their stuff. Follow them on Twitter at The Game Inn. And if you've got a question about something that's hard to find, looking for a game, you can just shoot them an email at The Game Inn, again with two N's, thegameinnpa@gmail.com. Special shout out goes to, once again, to Jonathan Mann, who wrote our intro song, There Are No People in the Future. Check out all his great stuff on his YouTube page or follow him on Twitter. That is, oh my God, look at that. That is, just got some cool news. I'll show you that in a second. Follow him on Twitter at Song of Day Man. That's at Song of Day Man on Twitter. I want to remind you, look, I want to give a big shout out to our members. And I'm saying, oh my God, because I was just checking it out. And we got a brand new member, right? A brand new member is Linda. Thank you to Linda for jumping in at the $15 a month level. Thank you, Linda. Thank you to Steve, who also jumped in at a $26 a month level. And thank you to Dan, who jumped in the $5 a month level. You guys, you all, men, women, you make all this possible. The love is just like crazy. I want to thank you so much. You are what makes this all possible. So thank you for stepping up and become a patron of Raging Chicken. For as little as $5 a month. Yes, because look, if we want a progressive future, we need progressive media, right? We're doing our part here. Support Pull No Punches Homegrown Progressive Media today by becoming a patron, just like Linda, like Steve. Man, it's crazy. Like Linda, like Steve, like Dan. Right, become a patron by going to patreon.com/rcpress, right? Look, we're in for the fight, but we need you, right? Become a patron for the price of a good beer once a month. Help keep the media in the movement, the media. Head on over to patreon.com/rcpress and become a member. Become a patron for as little as $5 a month. Sean, welcome, man. It is so freaking good to see you, man. How you doing?
I'm doing pretty good. How are you?
You know, I don't know, to be honest with you. I don't know how to answer that question honestly. Right? So I'm just gonna give you I'm great. Yeah, I'm fine, Sean. I'm fine.
It's like the dog meme. This is fine. Everything is fine. Okay.
Right, exactly.
Yeah, this is just like, I mean, the weather's nice right now, at least out here in central PA. I don't know about you, but.
Well, you know, it's, like, you know, it's
holy
good.
Shit, that fucking storm that we had.
Yeah. Oh, that was freaking crazy. We had, I mean, freaking like, that was crazy. And, you know, I was like, you know, back to school at Gaslight U. And that was, you know, like a whole other trip this week. My kids freaking in like mask off school district over here in Pennridge. It's been quite a time. I'm a little, let's just say, on edge. This is probably the, you know, Sean, I went into this school year, the beginning of this school year, I started at the end of my rope. So I'm like, I'm ready to roll, basically what it comes down to.
Nice.
But so, I mean, yeah, but the first thing, you kind of got through, your family and everything got through the storm and everything all right?
Yeah, everything was okay. There were a couple tornadoes like that touched down. I can't believe like we're fucking talking about this. The fact that like we've had two storms now within the past month in the Philadelphia area that produced like multiple tornadoes. The one like last month produced like at least 10 or 12 across that whole entire area. Yep. And then, you know, a couple really big tornadoes hit because of Ida. So Welcome to the new normal with this stuff.
Right. As long as you understand.
And it's not like these were small tornadoes. Like,
dude, I mean, seriously, I was watching. I mean, this came within a quarter mile of my mother-in-law's house. Right. Freaking in kind of middle of Bucks County. Right. I mean, kind of running through. And this is not the first tornado that ran through Bucks County, like in the past 30 days. Right. I mean, it's like the new tornado alley here.
Yeah.
Right. But, you know, if you believe people who make comments in like our YouTube page, for example, like it's not because of climate change. Here, let me show you some mathematical formulas to prove it. Right. Yeah, I'm serious. Like, it's insane. Yeah. I mean, you think about it like this. On the East Coast, here we are, we're dealing with this kind of the aftermath of this freaking insane storm and the flooding. And then on the West Coast, you're having unprecedented and historic wildfires once again. I mean, it's just, this is awful.
And apparently the fires out in Russia are like four times the size of the one that's happening in California Siberia. Right now.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, like, I mean, we're just, yeah, this is climate change. This is what, you know, people have been like warning about, and it's pretty fucking insane. I mean, the fires are one thing, but like just seeing the photos coming out of Philadelphia, how high the Schuylkill River crested, you know, like what happened in Manayunk, one of the places had like, there was like 5 feet of mud in the basements of like the houses along like Main Street Manayunk. The fucking Vine Street Expressway became a moat.
That was unbelievable.
Yeah, that became like that pretty much became a moat.
It's like New Venice.
That's where I went to high school, like right along the like Broad and Vine, Roman Catholic High School, is where I went, and it's right literally right on Broad and Vine streets, in Center City, Philadelphia, and just it's seeing that thing, how big the Vine Street Expressway is, and driving on that all the time, and then like seeing that like under 15 feet of water. Is pretty insane. So
I was there's this book I've talked about on the show, on the show before, Kim Stanley Robinson's called the Ministry of the Future. It was his most recent book, and it's really kind of centered around climate change, part of the story. And there's these scenes and chapters and things that's happening, as you know, you have this kind of, you know, really climate crisis where seas are rising, the Arctic is no longer freezing, you know, again, it's like the near future that this is written in. And you know, there's like all this, like there's these people who start kind of like doing this kind of like a new agey kind of boat trips to the North Pole and things like this, and having these big parties and like dance parties and things like this on these series of rafts that are together in like the North Pole because it's all freezing. And, you know, and at first when I first read that, I was thinking like, you know, that's kind of, that's freaking disgusting. I mean, just think of people do it. But then I'm like, no, that's probably what people would do. And sure enough, right, it's part of those pictures we saw coming up Philadelphia included like people doing like flips off the bridges into the Vine Street, like sewage expressway. Right. And people kayaking through the streets of Manhattan. Right. I mean,
it wasn't just like the Philadelphia area. This, yeah. Like what happened in New York.
Yeah.
Well, I think like 50 people died at least in New York.
Because
of this, it's just a horrible fucking way to like go call up like in a flash flood like that.
Oh my God,
like,
it just
like, I mean, just, yeah. And then like, I mean, our infrastructure is totally fucked, with all this. I mean, there's just no way we can do it. And I mean, we really have to look at this and start considering how we start getting rid of these highways and start getting rid of like car like consumption and use more like public transit and stuff like that. We shouldn't be expanding highways at this point in 2021.
Totally. I mean, period. I mean, seriously. And you know, but also that brings up that the corollary question, which kind of leads into our next thing too as well. But it's like, you know, the next question is like, well, not just we need to stop building highways. We need to start figuring out like how we respond effectively politically on this too as well. Because like, look, you've got already Joe Manchin in the Wall Street Journal just had an op-ed, right, published. Good timing, Joe, about how he's not all keen about voting for this kind of climate stuff in this new infrastructure bill, right? Because remember, his vote is key, right? If you're going to pass this through reconciliation, you need 50 votes. And so right ahead of a hurricane that's
caused New York and Philadelphia are both underwater.
Exactly. And Wall Street Journal is based in New York City. He releases an op-ed there that basically says, yeah, it is climate stuff. I don't know about it. So we've got to get serious about, number one, freaking eliminating the freaking filibuster, period, right? And kind of like going full pressure to get this like reconciliation bill passed immediately.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, Sean, if you think about it like this, right? I mean, that has to get through. But what we're seeing right now, that's just what happened in Texas and the Supreme Court basically saying, we did nothing we could do about this. I guess we got to let Roe v. Wade go by the wayside. We got to let
The way they did it.
That's what I mean. It was freaking disgusting.
In the dark of the night. Like, I mean, just like, yeah, we're not going to challenge this bill. But, we're not even going to hear the case. To, yep. Like,
we're not going to hear the case, right? And I've heard like a bunch of analysis on this. And like, the more I hear about what the Texas law is, the worse it becomes. Because you it's like 100% clear that that law was put in place. The only purpose for doing it was a way of trying to kind of give the Supreme Court an excuse not to pursue it, to allow it to stand, right? To start to build that in. Because the state basically, I learned this, I was listening to Chris Hayes' show last night, learned this one, is that normally what happens in a case like this, when they appeal to the Supreme Court to kind of like put a stay on the enacting of a particular law. This has happened again and again and again in passing of these anti-abortion laws or abortion ban laws or overturn Roe v. Wade stuff. It would get to the point of like they'd pass it in the state and then there'd be a lawsuit. Right. And the lawsuit would basically have to name a government official that is responsible for overseeing the enforcement of that particular law. And then they would take it to the Supreme Court and say, demand that there's a stay until this gets worked out. Right. What the Texas law did is they basically said, no, we're going to make it illegal for the government to enforce the law. So we're going to pass the law, but the government it's going to be illegal for the government to enforce it. So therefore, there's no one to name in a lawsuit. Instead, we're going to grant individuals a bounty of $10,000 to track down people who have abetted an abortion in any way. And it literally is like the freaking stories out of the Wild West when you have these freaking bounty hunters.
You're encouraging lynch mobs. You're encouraging political. Totally. It's state-sanctioned violence. Like, it is state-supported and state-sanctioned violence, like, that they're doing here. I mean, like, and it's pretty fucking naked compared to, like, what they've done in the past in regards of, like, sponsoring state violence. Like, you know what I mean?
It's
just, like, yeah.
I mean, you know, I don't think things get better from here.
Oh, no, I mean, like, I mean, it's going to put the onus on how important 2022 is because, I mean, like... Yeah, I mean, there's literally like going to be one person who's going to be stopping this shit from happening, and that's going to be the next governor of Pennsylvania. If we, you know, if we're going to fucking elect Josh Shapiro for this, but like, I mean, Tom Wolf is the only person stopping the bans from happening here in Pennsylvania right now. I mean, if the
good evening from New York
Republicans, like, yeah. So I mean, like, you know, like if Mastriano or Lou Barletta or someone like that becomes governor, I mean, it's effectively illegal in Pennsylvania.
Well, absolutely, 100%. Right? I mean, I think, and we've
that, already... Like, that's a week one agenda item. That'll be a week, that'll be exactly. Like day one.
Exactly. And this is also the, like, you know, we've had, I'm spacing out her name right now, but the governor from South Dakota, right, who's a presidential hopeful, she's already indicated that okay, look, hey, now we got our roadmap about the law that we can pass in order to kind of ban abortion in the state. So they're planning on moving ahead with that in South Dakota. I mean, there's like a race on the right wing right now about which other state is going to be able to follow in the suit of Texas more quickly.
Florida. Yeah, I mean,
this is bad. I mean, this is super, super bad. And, you know, and now for the first time, you finally got Nancy Pelosi saying that, you know, that we're going to go out and try to kind of like, you know, codify Roe v. Wade after like, if they're Democrats yammering about this for like 20 years or more about how they're going to codify like Roe v. Wade in law, but never moving forward and pushing forward on it, they're finally, it looks like they're finally going to do this, right? They're finally going to try to pass a law that is basically going to make the legislate Roe v. Wade and not make it a Supreme Court decision. But guess what? If the House goes ahead and passes, there you go. The House goes ahead and passes this, it goes to the Senate. And there's no way it gets through the Senate without filibuster reform. Even if it gets filibuster reform, that's still questionable given Joe Manchin's outspoken, you know, stance against abortion.
Yeah. I mean, like, we have come to the point in this party, you know, talking about this yesterday with Brett, on Twitter, like, you can see it in the caucuses here, especially like in Pennsylvania. Like, we've come to the point where it's unacceptable to be a Democrat that supports restricting access to abortion. I mean, like, it's pretty much universal now in both caucuses. You might have like a few conservative Democrats who still vote for the abortion stuff, but I mean, the numbers aren't there as they were like 10 like years ago, when you would have 150 people in the House voting for like restricting abortion access. Like, those Democrats are gone.
Yeah.
Like, you know.
Well, let me ask you this, just so we have this out there on the record, from like, I'm just curious your angle on this too, as well. Now, I've heard, now there's two different news shows that I've been listening to, or one podcast, one new show, where you got, you know, Bob Casey being brought up twice as one of the kind of like, say, pro-life Democrats that they're worried about kind of getting to be able to sign on to that legislation. Do you think Casey continues on his kind of like progressive trajectory and basically...
I think lately the stuff with Casey, I haven't heard who said this, but I mean,
saw Rachel Maddow show last night. It was on I want to say Emma Vigeland from the Majority Report. May have mentioned,
I
might have that.
Like, I think people are, I think people who are talking about Casey now with the abortion stuff really, I guess, aren't paying attention to where he's been over the past so many years. Like, you know, I feel like Casey is someone who has shifted with the political winds of the party, especially on this issue, and has become more reliable over the years on this. Like, he wasn't, like, you know, like, he's been, you know, it's been working to get him on this, but I could see him signing on to this just because of, like, this is where the winds of the Democratic Party is going. I don't see him not supporting it.
I hope so. I hope that's true. And that's my inclination too, as well. The one thing that has been sticking in my kind of like, you know, has been buzzing in my, like, you know, peripheral vision around this too, as well, as though, you know,
I think
he's
going to
be facing an election,
person,
right?
I think Bob Casey's not the person to be focusing on, in my opinion.
Like, no. I don't believe he's the focus, but, you know, let's, you know, might as well kind of.
No, I mean, like,
dot every I.
No, he's not. I don't think he's someone to focus on. At this point, abortion access in Pennsylvania polls at like 70%. It's universally accepted in both parties. Like, you know, it would be a politically fatal move for him to like do this now. And I think it would just be politically malpractice. So, I mean, I think people are looking at the wrong person if they're looking at Casey.
No, I mean, look, to be clear, let me say that was kind of an offhanded mention of someone who had been in the past. Yeah. Really, the primary focus has been on Manchin.
Yeah.
Which, again, is right across the board, right? Which is like what Manchin loves, because he gets that much more attention. But, you know, this is like dire situation. And we're talking about serious rolling back of so much, not to mention the fact that the pandemic is raging on, right, in the midst of all this. So, I mean,
I think, like, in big news,
yeah,
the big news of the week is Joe Rogan.
Totally. Come on. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it goes in this order. It goes Supreme Court decision, Joe Rogan, right? The flooding of half
go, like,
the 1A, planet
1B.
Is, don't
it's
worry
not
about
like,
that.
Yeah, like, but I mean, like, it's, I think it's hilarious. I think, like, people, I'm definitely looking forward to, like, the Twitch streamers and Sam Cedar and, like, Pac-Man and others just start eating this shit up. No pun intended. Just, like, like, no, they just start, like, because, like, lefty, like, YouTube and lefty Twitch streamers are going to, like, really just, like, be all over this. And I can't wait to see, like, their reactions to this. I think it's fucking hilarious. Like, it's, I would say I was rogue and curious a couple of years ago for like maybe like 5 or 6 months, just like listening in to things. And I was just like, yeah, this is just stupid at this point. Like, I think he does really good interviews with like people like Tarantino actors, but then he has like crazy fucking political views that are just like, what the fuck are you doing?
Well, like I said, it's like, he's like the perfect emblem for that, like most popular podcast, because like, he's like white guys. He's like, seriously, that who have, they don't have, there's no cost for them to be inconsistent in their views. There's no cost to kind of just like say random shit and then be like, oh, well, right. I guess I was wrong. Right. Like there's no need for any consistency or accountability.
I mean, looking from those pictures, maybe he should have taken the vaccine. He should have gotten the vaccine.
You think?
And not use his fucking podcast, the largest platform, to spread misinformation on that stuff.
What's that mean? I mean, that's like criminal. You know what I'm saying? I mean, the guy just sitting there saying nonsense, right? Like, just because why? His gut tells him so? I mean, because he doesn't freaking read. You know, it's like he's just on there. She's like on there like, you know, I don't know. I heard this. And,
I mean, he admits it. He's like, I don't fucking prepare.
That's what I'm saying. He's like, that's what I'm saying. I'm not making a judgment call. I'm using like, this is what he says. Like, oh, and I just come on and he's like, you know, he's just talk.
He pulls a Larry King and just fucking wings it.
Yeah, what's on my mind. You know, I was scrolling through somewhere. I said, oh, you know, COVID's a lie. Maybe that's true. I don't know. Right.
I mean, but we're at the point where like people are taking ivermectin. Like, we're fucking that's talking about this 2 weeks in a row. And then you had like the fucking Jesus people, a couple like Jesus people got struck down by COVID this week. Like, which is just like, I mean,
that conservative talk show host, right? It's like the third one to go down, I think.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, but it's just like, I mean, these fucking people are, I mean, just watching the videos of some of the people, like, I should have gotten the vaccine, like, and then they end up dying. Like, I mean, are fucking terrible videos.
It's
like gut wrenching.
It's freaking tragic. It's horrible.
Like the person is just like, I was like, I mean, the person admitted that they were like, hesitant, not like denying, but like hesitant on it. But like, yeah, I mean, this shit now is like why I got vaccinated. I mean, you see like 30-year-olds like dropping from this, like right
exactly.
Now, just like, I'm not fucking dying from this. Like, you know what I mean?
Dude, I've been back to campus 1 week, right, at Kutztown University, and I've already had 3 students tell me they've had COVID and are vaccinated right now. They're not positive right now, but had them earlier in August or the end of July. That's not good, especially as we know the Delta variant, right? People who are vaccinated can also spread the shit, right?
Yeah.
I'll get into that in a minute, but it's like, but seriously, it's like, you know, I mean, for Joe Rogan to be out there, it's kind of like saying this nonsense, he's just unbelievable. And then you've got these pictures of him like coming up on the night and he's like,
fucking
all
face is
sweaty
like...
and red and like, I feel great. You know, it's like, you gotta be freaking kidding me.
Yeah. I mean, like, it's also like, you know why like no one from Fox News has gotten.
Because they have the most rigid, like COVID protocols in the entire freaking industry.
Yeah. Like, you don't want your cash cow, Tucker Carlson, getting COVID and dying or Hannity. Like,
no, they have mandatory testing. They have cards. They have, I mean, everything. Seriously.
Yeah. So.
Free vaccination clinics for everybody on the news. Seriously.
But, I mean, it was kind of, I started laughing. I was laughing when I saw like the post that he like is on ivermectin and he fucking admitted to taking it too.
I mean, seriously though, but I mean, how can you not laugh though? I mean, it's really hard not to.
Yeah. I mean, there's some cases it's not like, yeah.
No,
like,
I'm talking specifically about Joe Rogan here. I'm not lumping everybody in one barrel. I'm saying Joe Rogan, it just like, I saw him like,
I mean,
like,
you're the man, the largest platform in the fucking like world,
right,
at this point with your podcast.
And let me be clear,
like, you
just so that I'm not like anybody like you, you know, I'm not like inhumane here. I'm not saying I wish bad things on him, but it's like in like the era of kind of gallows humor around every corner, this was one of those moments where I was like, oh my God, Monty Python skit. So, ring out your dead, ring out your dead. I mean, seriously, I mean, it's crazy. What can you do but laugh here? Seriously, seriously.
Yeah.
So yeah. So one other thing. So we got. So look, I've got to have. This is kind of where my head goes right now. Is that everything that's happened this week? Right. I start thinking about this. This is one of the reasons why I wish I could just quit my job and do this one like all the time. Because there are so many people that I want to talk to and bring on the show to kind of talk about some of these issues, because it's just, it's so bad. I mean, it's like, on the one hand, I'm like, Sean, you remember through the Trump administration, it just felt like the fire hose was on all the time.
Yeah.
Of like shit was going on. This is, it's a different fire hose, but it is nonetheless a fire hose. Right. It's like the Trump fire hose was just kind of like nonsense coming from everywhere and kind of like slash and burn everywhere that you can be. But it was just kind of like the chaotic, like horrible human being just going after everything. Right. And it was just hard to kind of get your footing. Right now, we're talking about the fire hose of like material reality coming at us. Right. I mean, what happened in Texas with the Supreme Court there's no other way to look at it as a fundamental assault. And I'm really upset that I can't remember this woman's name. She was on, she's an amazing journalist, who was on Chris Hayes last night. Rebecca Traister, I was hoping it was going to come in. And she was talking about how, you know, because they're like, well, this seems like there's going to be finally the time where individuals are going to step up and we're going to defend Roe, right? This is the moment. And she was just like, you know what? This has been the moment for a long time, right? This has been the moment. And like, this has been going on where we've had multiple moments like this where people keep on saying step up, then people don't. And there's been people like me and people like activists and people like other journalists and like a women's group who've been saying, this is the road that we're on. And everybody looks around, including people in the Democratic Party, and looks at us like we're hysterical. And now that we're here, she's like, it's infuriating. Right. And now, you know, and then you've got like Dahlia Litwick, right, who like writes on the Supreme Court, not a big lefty by any stretch of the imagination, really solid reporter. And she's like saying, basically, look, anybody wants to talk about things that you could do in Joe Biden's commission on looking at alternative, what we could do with Supreme Court. She's like, it's all an academic exercise. If they're not talking seriously about expanding the number of justices on the court at this point, there's nothing you can do. And all this kind of like academic exercise about possibilities about what we could do in 27 years from now is worthless. So for her to be going public and saying that was just, I was like, whoa.
Yeah. I mean, like this is going to be like a whole entire generation of these fucking decisions that are coming out by the Supreme Court. Like, and Democrats are just going to fucking play lip service with this.
Yep.
They're not going to do anything.
No.
I mean, like,
Well, I mean, I think
they would rather, they're more concerned about their right dying in office, like Dianne Feinstein or Nancy Pelosi, dying with the gavel in their fucking hands, versus like getting out of the way and letting actual people do stuff. Like, you know what I mean? Like, it's just, it's like these people think it's their right to die in office.
Well, I do think that the pressure is being felt, though. I think that's why Nancy Pelosi kind of got out. And even though she, like, you know, she gave a press conference that was communicating everything.
Stephen Breyer's
in terms
not going
like,
to fucking retire, though. Like,
what's that?
Breyer ain't going to retire. And then we're going to have a 7-2 Supreme Court. Mm-hmm. Like, just because, like, he thinks it's his right to die in office.
Yes.
Like, you know, because, yeah. I mean, like, he should retire. And, like, frankly, like, Ruth Bader Ginsburg should have retired 10 years ago when this was going on. Like, yep. But here we are.
But here we are, right. So, exactly. So, I mean, you know,
it's really just, like, it's a rundown of, like, Chris Hedges' like, talks of just failures of liberal democracies and how they've led, like, you know, Weimar Germany. And how it led to, like, you know, far right authoritarian governments in Europe and nationalism. So,
Well, there we have it. Well, at least the one thing we
happy
got one,
stuff.
Yeah, so one positive, because like Sean and I like to kind of close out segments with some happy talk. and so the one good thing we got going on is that the phone records of legislators who may have kind of abetted the January 6th insurrection have been subpoenaed or are going to be subpoenaed or something along these lines. So that's at least a step in a positive direction or acknowledgement for that matter.
And Scott Perry's one of them. So.
Yep. We got a little comment from Jamie, and I couldn't agree enough or more, Jamie, that the Supreme Court of the United States, or SCOTUS, is why no one should have voted for Jill Stein in 2016. Like, do we do this?
Yes.
Right? And I think that's one giant chorus of election have consequences, folks.
But it's Bernie Sanders' fault if you didn't watch the Twitter discourse this week. Yeah, not the fact that, like... Yeah. Hillary Clinton was an ahistorical, like, terrible candidate against Trump and just dropped the ball.
But, well, like, look, there's a whole lot of people that are looking to keep their jobs right now. I really believe that what we see, a lot of that kind of Twitter nonsense that you saw, some of that originates from these people who recognize that they have been fundamentally wrong and are trying to find a way to stay relevant within political discourse. This is true of the discourse of those people that have been kind of talking about Afghanistan for the past 20 years, right? That's part of why they were giving all these hot takes all over the map that meant absolutely nothing. They're just restating old talking points because they're trying to insert themselves in terms of relevance. It's the same with these kind of hacks that are on Twitter right now who want to kind of go out and kind of rehash arguments from the past about Bernie Sanders because it doesn't matter, and you're no longer relevant. We have to move to a much more aggressive and militant response. That is the only thing that we can do at this point. And by militant, I mean we need to be organizing, mass organizing, and putting pressure upon our politicians and supporting the most progressive politicians we can have from the school board right up until national office. That's my free political advice for the day. So. But Sean, so just one quick question on that. So where do you think this goes? Phone records being subpoenaed. Where do you think, what's going to be the next step in this little kind of saga?
I think it shows. I think these subpoenas will show communications with Trump officials. I think that they will show communications with people like Scott Pressler and Ali Alexander, who were two of the main proponents in Stop the Steal movement. Like, I wouldn't be surprised if you see stuff. I mean, obviously Mastriano is going to be on there, but like, look for communications with people like Nick Fuentes or Scott Pressler, Ali Alexander, and people who were really, you know, these right-wing operatives, fascists, who were really instrumental in stoking these Stop the Steal things. I mean, there was no fucking accident that Jim Jordan and Scott Perry came to the Capitol like on November 3rd, 4th, 5th. Like,
I thought it was just like their day to go up there.
Yeah.
It was like their turn, wasn't it?
Jim Jordan was just taking a tour.
Yeah, just taking a tour. Okay, this door's unlocked. This door's unlocked. This door's unlocked. Right.
Yeah. So
crazy. But well, we shall see.
I think that's what we'll see.
Yep. We're going to see. That's going to get all nuts and crazy. So here we go. Anyways, this is Kevin Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken. I want to kind of say once again, huge thanks go to our kind of newest patrons. Thank you, Linda. Thank you, Steve. And thank you, Dan, for becoming a Raging Chicken patron. You too can help support this show and everything that we do here to help keep the media in movement, the movement in the media. Just head on over to patreon.com/rcpress today, and you can become a patron for as little as $5 a month. We're going to be right back after this quick break with some more craziness that's happening right here in Pennsylvania. We'll talk to you then. This is Kevin Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken Press. For the past 7 years, Raging Chicken Press has brought pull no punches, progressive reporting and commentary to the interwebs. Our long-form investigative pieces, stories that no access journalist wants to touch, or rollicking weekly podcasts strive to advance progressive movements and perspectives rooted in the struggles happening across the country or down the street. We've broken national stories and caused our share of discomfort in the halls of power. If we want a progressive future, we need progressive media.
and you can help support Pull No Punches, homegrown progressive media today. Become a member of Raging Chicken Press for as little as $5 a month. Simply go to patreon.com/rcpress and choose your membership level. We need to make sure to keep the movement in the media and the media in the movement. Best way you can do that is to become a member of Raging Chicken today by going to patreon.com/rcpress. Thank you for your energy, your encouragement, and your support. Keep up the fight. Hey, everybody. Sorry about that. I got some weird stuff happening with my headphones here. Welcome back, Raging Chicken's Out to Coup podcast. I'm here once again with Sean Kitchen. Sean, I'm just going to just hand it the plate over to you right now because it's been quite a week in your neck of the woods. As he's freaking sucking on
yes.
a giant
I'm sorry. Yes, it has.
My bad.
No, I wanted to get a quick like sip in.
Quick sip in for this.
Yeah. Get ready. So a couple weeks, so last week we ended up getting our emails in from New York County Commissioner's office that we asked for in the right to know request. I think that they use this as a stall tactic. Basically what they did was they denied our emails. We had to appeal in order to get them, and then they waited till like the day the filings were due just to hand the emails over instead of having this case go any further. So we got these emails. One of the emails that we got, our chain of emails we got came from State Representative Mike Jones,
who write is that not down, everybody. State Representative Mike Jones,
okay? Who is not a rapper, not the rapper, not to be confused with the rapper Mike Jones, but State Representative Mike Jones, and his office went on a witch hunt looking for 15 dead voters. They claimed to have found 15 dead voters who died in 2019 but voted by mail in 2020, or they died before 2019, so they were dead for like a couple years before they voted and ended up voting anyway. And so Mike Jones hands this over to the York County Commissioners. He sees the CC's the fucking district attorney on this, and like he pretty much says, yeah, me and my staff like my staff started conducting, like looking into this, and they came up with names 15, and I'd say potential, and I emphasize potential dead voters. So Mike Jones does that. They start looking into it. Turns out the voters were not dead. They were all alive and active voters.
Were they though? Do we really know that they're not zombies, Sean?
I mean, so, I mean, we can see. But I mean, like, and then
that's crazy.
The fucking the solicitor had to respond to this and said, no, they're not dead, they're all alive. And then he pretty much did like, oops, I was wrong. I spoke to a lawyer, and a lawyer who knew things knew a little bit more about this stuff than I did, and looks like they're all alive. Like, yeah.
So like I led with the accusation and then looked for the facts.
Right. Yeah. So.
Oh my God, the Mike Jones zombie hunt. That's just brilliant.
Yes. So I mean, like, it took off pretty quickly as soon as we put it up on Twitter. Obviously, it took me like literally half an hour to write these tweets out to make sure like every word was meticulously correct and had a meaning to it. And had to put that snark in there. The problem, question mark, they were all locked and active. Yes. So, I mean, as soon as we put that off, a couple people retweeted it, like Stephen Crusoe and Adam Bonin retweeted it. And then, like, from there, you actually, like, see this stuff happening in real time. And then, like, some election professors and journalism professors quote tweeted and retweeted it, like the data professors. And yep. Then, like, these are accounts like professors with like 15, 20,000 people.
Yep.
And then like Sam Stein retweeted it. Dave Weigel, Chris Hayes, like, and then it just took off from there. So.
So there you go. Welcome to the spotlight, Mike Jones.
Yeah. No, I mean, like, it's fun. I mean, I love setting off, like, it is fun, like, tossing these grenades out there in public. Like,
well, and it just, I mean, look.
And it also shows, like, I mean, yeah, it's funny, but it shows you the depth these people were going, like, to fucking 15 dead people voting. Like, this is what you're doing after the election in the weeks, the days following the election. Like, this stuff happened, like, in November of 2020. So, like, they were doing this as, like, they were, like, just pushing forward all these fucking conspiracy theories around the Stop the Steal movement and, like, dead people voting. Basically, like, you know, there were 200,000 more people voting in Pennsylvania than actual voters on record. Like, stuff like this. And, you know, this is how we almost had an election get overthrown by Trump because of this nonsense.
Right, right, right. So, well, I mean, it also shows you how important it is to have people like you doing this kind of work. I mean, and kind of like organizations like PA Spotlight, just to be out there doing this stuff. Because, look, I frankly, I don't think that would have gotten into the light of day had it not been for the work you guys are doing. So, you know, kudos.
Thank you. No, I mean, it also shows that, like the media really needs, like, it is funny with this stuff. I don't know, like, how far back. But, like, I've gotten the other right to know requests, like, from Fulton County and stuff like that. Like, when we followed these requests, I wanted to go from, like, the election day, like, boom. And what we've been doing with this project is gathering, like, source material from, like, the days, weeks, and maybe, like, month pre-January 6th, like, with this stuff and, like, get what's going on. So I think there's an opportunity here. We don't have, like, a lot. We don't have, like, salacious emails, but we have stuff that, like, gives us a timeline of how these things were going on. And I think that's going to be, like, a really good, like, long-term project. Like, make a timeline of these emails, incorporate, like, what else was going on at this time.
Yeah, you know, and I think for what it's worth is, you know, I think that why this work is so, that kind of work is so important is because I think that for a lot of folks who are not in the weeds on a lot of this, you know, it seems like there's, like, political tendencies that just happen. You know, it seems like things are going in this direction, or things that are going, or people say, and, you know, the whole idea that, you know, people or constituents feel, or, you know, what the voters think, that does a lot of work a lot of times for what's actually going on. And to put actually, like, names to the actions that are moving things in one direction shows you that basically this is, like, there's actors in the world, real people, who are doing this stuff, right? And so, yes, it's not, like you said, salacious, but it's a timeline. It's a paper trail. It shows you who is actually making these choices or trying to push things in different kinds of directions, which is essential. Because then once we realize that it's actually just people doing it this way, then we know that people can change it, right? It's not a force of nature, right? It's a force of freaking ideologues is what it is.
Yeah.
Speaking of ideologues... Right. Let's talk about those 20 strong men, man. How about that?
Yeah. I mean, yeah. I wasn't there for the rally. I stopped by before and I was just like, fuck this shit. I'm leaving. Like, I just don't need to be there. Like, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Zach was tweeting about this, like, as he was recording. And they had their own live stream there, and. No, I mean, this is just like this guy, Stephen Lynch, is it was fucking insane, actually, like to hear this. Basically, like threatening mob rule at a school board meeting over mask mandates. Like, I mean, but it also shows you the fucking shit that we've been hearing about mask mandates over this stuff. This is a very vocal minority. If there's one thing that'll save us with the school board races coming up, it's that the overwhelming majority of people, like 70%, support these mask mandates. It's just like we have to mobilize these people to get out and vote for these school board meetings. And like these people are really just like going out in 4K right now and just like putting their names out there and really just like with no fucks given.
Right.
I mean, like, I was listening to Rick Smith, his intro about this the other day. Like, here you have this guy who's just your normal fucking working class neighbor, like, saying this shit.
Yep.
Like, I know. I mean, it's all like all this stuff is being promoted and pushed by the usual players, FreedomWorks, other right-wing billionaire groups, to have, you know, as Rick said, like the poors
yep.
fighting amongst themselves.
That's exactly. You just throw the meat out there and watch them scrap. That's exactly. So yeah. this guy, I mean, like, so let's, this is exactly what he
I
said.
I mean, this, yeah. Go ahead. Yeah, this was like, this was a straight up like Nazi speech.
Yeah. So he says, so here's part of what he said here, right? He says, you know, so after opening with, this is, I'm reading because some sections from Crooks and Liars, they got a great piece on this to contextualize it. It says, quote, you know, he starts off by saying, make men great again, make men again. Right. So there you go. You're already in the kind of like misogynistic kind of white supremacist playbook right there. Right. And he basically said that, you know, he's like, he looked at the mask mandate, right, or looking at masking children as kind of like cause to basically a call for arms. And he said, quote, when we walk into those school boards, we're going to have everything we need to go down there with those 9-0 school boards that voted to put these masks back on children with no scientific, it's done. Giving them the research and data. Do you understand that? He yelled, he's like, not making sense, obviously. Forget going into those school boards with freaking data. You go into those school boards to remove them. That's what you do. They don't follow the law. You go in and you remove them. I'm going in there with 20 strong men, and I'm going to speak to the school board, and I'm going to give them an option. They can leave or be removed, right?
And, like, this stuff was happening, again, usual people were talking yep. previously. You have Scott Pressler over the weekend, like, these same, like, World Freedom rallies that was happening. Basically say we're coming for the school boards. The Stop the Steal movement is coming for the school boards. Like, and this is exactly what we're seeing. These are all insurrectionists. These are QAnon conspiracy theorists who are like going for school board members and like physically threatening violence against yes. them. Like, their right. goal is just to have anarchy and not to have this stuff working. But like, it is. Yeah, I mean, it's just like, it's, I mean, all this stuff is connected. Like, this is the reopen movement. This yep. is the anti-mask movement. This is the anti-COVID movement. Stop the Steal. This is Audit the Vote. Like, the school board stuff, all this stuff, these are the same people who've been doing this shit over the past year, who have been getting supported by institutions like the Commonwealth Foundation, who allowed these first few rallies to be astroturfed and legitimized with their support. You know, you have FreedomWorks coming in and the Heritage Foundation, you know, pumping money into the critical race theory. You have Commonwealth Foundation, again, playing both sides of this. They are playing the, like, you know, concerned white suburban parent with teaching critical race theory in places like Lower Merion. And then they are profiting off of the backs of Black and brown children
right.
through their charter school agendas. Like, I mean, like, that right there is like the perfect exactly. dividing. Yeah. It's like just there, playing both ends of it.
Yep. There's when you kind of like, you know, if you sew something together really loose and then you pull the threads and it all comes together. That's like that.
Yeah,
exactly. So, and something I didn't see this week. All right. So in speaking of other kind of like in the nut job corner of our coverage here, Russ Diamond actually was kind of active on Twitter with his latest comedy routine, you know, from what I understand.
Yeah, this was on Facebook, and he made a very crude rape joke comparing forced vaccinations to rape, or vaccine mandates to rape, and using like the my body, my choice rhetoric and stuff like that. And he got called out for it promptly, like, and it's just been bouncing around to TikTok. A couple people made TikTok videos on it that went pretty viral and really got like tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of views to that post.
There you go. Good old Russ Diamond. And again, one of the key players in a lot of the nonsense and a lot of the craziness that's happening in the
Pennsylvania. Also, someone who has like PFAs filed against him.
Right.
Like, I mean, just point that out there. I mean, so.
Let's be clear. Crochet. Yes, Emily. It was crochet. That's what I was thinking of. Good. So let's talk about the other big news in this week is that governor, you know, some, I don't know, the alarm clock or something went off at the governor's mansion.
Eight right? dollars short.
I realized like, oh wait, school started already? And so I decided that like, holy crap, wait a minute. You mean school boards are not requiring masks? Wait a minute, I thought everybody was gonna do the right thing here. Right? I would have preferred if everybody just did the right thing.
Right? And the insane thing about this was, like, you have healthcare lobbyists out there saying that Alison Beam, the acting secretary, has had the power to do this all along. But, like, there were Senate education hearing committees where, like, the administration, Alison Beam and others, were citing the Constitution that was passed, the amendments, that they can't do this. When, like, you have, like, conservative, moderate-leaning Republican healthcare lobbyists who represent pharma saying, no, you have the power to do this.
See, like, this is what I don't understand. I don't understand the mentality. And I'm going to talk about this again.
And now, like, since this happened,
yeah,
you have a bunch of Republicans introducing a constitutional amendment to restrict the powers even further as just a petty power play. By, like, 2023, when this gets on the ballot, if ever gets on the ballot, like, this will be for the most part behind us.
Maybe.
I mean, this is going to be like a flu shot, in my opinion.
But this is the thing that I don't understand this mentality, and it seems to be like an affliction that affects specific, like, Democrats specifically, right? Is that this idea that if you have a lawyer, right, who comes to you and says, like, yeah, I'm not sure if you have the legal authority to do this, right? With, like, why wouldn't you just do it anyways? And let it play out in the courts, right? I mean, at the very least, like, look, it's,
I mean, you're seeing this happen in Florida right now with school boards saying,
that's what
fuck
I'm
you
saying.
To the state.
I mean, like,
and like counties saying, fuck you to the state and doing it.
But why does, like, it only happen when it's like, you have to have people actually dying in the streets and, like, dire situations before they act? When you can see it coming, I mean, I don't know. I just don't understand that kind of hesitancy. And then, like, you know, Emma Viglin talks about this all the time, about hiding behind procedure, right? Or hiding behind, say, well, lawyers don't seem to think, like, well, don't seem to think. That means all that says to me is that you are not willing to fight for this, right? I mean, that's a fundamentally misunderstanding of politics and how politics works, right? Is that you fight, and sometimes you lose the fight, the specific fight, but it's worth it in the long run because it builds context.
But you know what?
Forward.
Wolf lost that will to fight after the first budget.
Well, but let's be clear though. Why did he do that? Because he thought he could do it all on his own.
Yeah.
Like, he went out there, he gave one of the best freaking budget speeches that I saw. But
that was the second.
Oh, that was the second
one. No, like, after that first budget fight. Like, but no, I mean, like, and for that, like, he didn't even rally anyone together before he gave that speech. The second one.
I was like, he just went out there and he kind of, like, okay, chastised the kind of, like, the Republicans in the House, but didn't let anybody know he was going to do it, and, like, didn't line people up, didn't have a plan for what happens afterwards, just thought something would happen.
Yeah,
I mean, it's like, it's really astonishing to me. It's because, like, he's not a dumb guy, right? I mean, but I also see, you know, I see this in like over and over again. I hear this.
I think he's just lame ducking it right now.
Yeah, but look, it's more than that, because this, I'm telling you, people, I don't understand this. This is a particular thing that happens, you know, I don't know. Like, it happens in my own union. You say, we got to fight this. Well, I don't know if we have the legal authority. Like, I don't you get it? How do you actually know the answer to that question?
You don't
unless
score
you
points
it?
Playing defense.
Yeah, but it's, like, a weird kind of defense, isn't it?
It's not even going on offense at that point. Like, you're just.
I mean, it's kind of like, you know, I don't even know, man. I mean, it's like, if you believe, look, I guess I look at this as, like, just like, how do you maintain some sense of being a human being in the world?
These institutions, yeah.
And I think, like, if you have something like, you recognize that these policies of these anti-masking policies or the mask optional policies, like in my school district, are going to actually have real harm on kids and communities, and you're a freaking human being who cares about other people, why wouldn't you just fight and say,
and
no, we're going to do this,
and let
the fight happen?
And then you just seated, like, weeks.
Yes.
Of people screaming at school board members.
Exactly.
Over something you could have done a month ago like, and you had the power to do it, but instead you allowed school board members to get hollered at for weeks over this, like at Central Bucks or out here in Central Dauphin or like in like other parts that this shit's going on. Like,
yeah. I don't know, Sean. I mean, look, I had a meeting last night.
I think you had the Republicans out here rat fucking their school districts for mask mandates. Like, what the fuck did you think was going to happen?
Well, that's exactly it. So I don't know. I mean, like the same kind of stuff, you know, this is, you know, I mentioned this at the top of the show too, as well. Like I, you know, talked with Steve Oros this morning, who's the, you know, he's a faculty member at Kutztown University who had a heart transplant, was ordered by his doctors he basically said, okay, you can go back to work, but you are not allowed to be back in like in person with COVID because it could kill you. And so he looked for an appropriate accommodation and he was denied. He was denied an ADA accommodation. Like, and you're going to listen to the show on Monday and you're going to hear all the details of it. But there's a couple layers there, right? There's the outrage that happens when we see like the kind of malfeasance and cruelty with a smiley face that the like in this case Kutztown University administration or these kind of anti-maskers, whatever it might be, or you know, say, well, oh, there's, you know, there's good thing we can do, we're gonna try to do this. So there's one thing, we have the outrage, but the second thing is like, well, people need to kind of also then step up and act on it, right? And it seems to me like, you know, look, the only party in terms of politics, the only party that's going to do that is the Democratic Party right now. Right. Yes, there's great activist groups. There's great organizing groups. There's great kind of like all set that are making this claim. Yeah. But right now in terms of that party. So but they have this kind of resistance and it's a particular I'm coming to think that it has to do with a particular kind of elitist mentality about keeping things comfortable, like just personally comfortable. And I you know, I read.
I don't want to miss brunch on Sundays, man.
Well, that's just it. I read this, you know, I read like, what was her name? D'Angelo's book, kind of White Fragility. Right. Because you have these people screaming about it on local school boards. Right. And, you know, it's like it was really interesting, right? Really fascinating reading things like this. But the more this all goes on, the more I'm she's 100% right. It's the whole idea is like you have people who their risk or right. They're facing real consequences like death. Right. Like lack of medical care, like prolonged sickness. Right. And they're saying we need this. We should do this. And then you have these kind of white or privileged folks who are saying
the
things
donor
like,
class who are from Bryn Mawr, the main line.
Yeah. And they're saying
and
like
all these fundraisers in their mansions and stuff like that.
Yeah. And then if they're made to feel uncomfortable, that means just like if they have feelings in their chest that makes them feel uncomfortable, then they claim that they're the victim or. They say, well, they anticipated feeling that discomfort. So they say, oh, there's nothing we could do, you know, because we had a lawyer say that we might not win the case. So therefore,
we can't rock the boat.
Yeah. So I don't know, man. I just like, you know, I see that. And I look, and yes, it's personal for me because the delay in Governor Wolf's delay, right, meant that my kids were in a freaking mask optional school for a week. That's what that meant. And what impact is that going to have? Not just with my kids, but all these, my kids for the most part wear their masks, but I can't even count on that. And then Pennridge School District released a freaking picture of like second day at school in fourth grade. Yay. A picture of fourth grade kids in a classroom, right? It's a public on their Facebook, right? And they're all these kids going, yay, back to school. And maybe, 25% of those kids had a mask on. And my view is they put that out as a giant F you. You know, and then what comes down, they released, and I'm not going to talk about this. I'm not going to go into this like completely right now because I will end up going on a long rant that nobody really wants to hear at this point. Right. So I'll keep that for a second show. But I will say this, right? They released a Let me just do one quick thing here. They released a just really amazing. They released a letter. The school board did, right? The superintendent, right, and the school district sent out an email to parents, right, that basically said, okay, look, this mandate comes on beginning September 7th. All kids have to wear masks in school, right? So shortly following upon that, the school board has to, of course, release its own letter to parents. Right. And I want to just hear the first opening paragraphs for this. Right. And I'm not, like I said, I won't do the whole of it. But this is what they said. Dear members of the Pembridge community, with no advance notice, the governor and the Department of Health unilaterally issued a new masking order. The order. The governor's order issued after the school year started has been disruptive to families and to school district administrators who should be more properly focused on getting school operations running smoothly. For those who have not read the governor's order, here it is. The governor's order mandates that all school districts enforce the requirement that all teachers, children, students, staff, and visitors, goes on. While the governor's order requires masking on buses and inside school buildings, it does not apply to outside settings, athletic practice, and competitions. Teachers will continue to look for things outside. The governor's order strips local school boards of any latitude to consider amendments to health and safety. It goes on. And then the last part of this letter, what they do is say, look, there's a loophole in what the governor said, right? You can actually say that you have a medical condition or that you have a doctor, but you don't have to show any proof of it. So it instructs them to the form to fill out to how to subvert the masking order. And because you don't require any proof that what you're saying is legitimate, there's going to be a whole lot of people that are going to do it. That's what this means. The fact that this comes down now. Right? So, I mean, you know, it's call me a little frustrated, Sean, but I just like, you know, I'm a little frustrated. That's all I got to say. Meanwhile, I'll kind of close out with this. On the pandemic things, this is, like I said, is my first week back at Kutztown University campus, where the university administration is doing the absolute legal minimum to keep people safe. That means that we have to require a mask. And I love the fact that they you know, gave us masks, right? Here's your mask. And they don't even have freaking like nose pinch things, right? To keep your glasses from fogging up, right? They're just kind of like, you know, somebody like had leftover underwear.
They went as cheap as possible.
Yeah. Oh, exactly. Oh, but the KU brand is there though, Sean. They had to save money
for that that percussion, the mallet laboratory.
The mallet museum. Totally, man. Why should we kind of provide faculty or staff or students with N95 masks when we're going to have a mallet museum? We got to kind of have priorities here, everybody. Right. So, you know, I have to say this is the first week back and this surprises me every time because I'll be honest. I mean, this pandemic has impacted me in ways that I don't always recognize consciously. And then I kind of get in a certain environment and I feel it. And my first class, when I went into my first class and I kind of like got things locked up and I looked up that student and I saw several students in the classroom, like, you know, got their junk hanging out of the top of their mask, right? Because they haven't learned how to freaking pull things up over their noses. Right. And really what it is, not that they haven't learned it. It's like it's a few white guys in all three of my classes that I had on Tuesday, three white guys, right, in the first class and then other ones in the other classes, just purposely keeping the mask down below their nose because they don't like wearing a mask. And that's their little sign of resistance. Right. So they're going to put everybody else at risk because they feel uncomfortable with it. Right. Walking in that walking. When I first got to campus, right, there's, you know, students walking in the building, no mask even in sight, even though it's required by university regulations. And there's absolutely no provisions by the university to make sure that masks are being required in the open areas that are outside the classroom, but still in closed buildings. Right. Despite the university's mask mandate. Right. People openly sitting around socializing with no mask and that's going on. Right. That's all happening. There's no contact tracing. There's no requirement for testing, right? There's ambiguous at best information about whether or not people are support, our students should support whether or not they're testing positive, right? They will not allow faculty to get tested at the university's own facilities. They have to go find testing on their own. And their CVS that's doing the testing in Kutztown is backed up a week. So if you feel sick today, you're going to have to wait a week before you can get tested. Right? That's where we're at. Right? So, you know, and again, there was a great piece in the Chronicle of Higher Education is called, you know, College and Universities Pursue Magical Thinking as a Solution to Pandemic or something along those lines of the title. And that's what they're doing. Right? They're using, like, they think that public relations can beat the virus. Right? It's the grit and fortitude model that Kenneth Hawkins said. We just kind of, like, pretend it's not there and just kind of push through, we'll be fine. it is the most irresponsible and backward way of kind of approaching something like a kind of a medical emergency, which we're in right now, like a kind of a pandemic, than I could possibly ever think. So it's like, it shows you the withering on the vine of the thing that we call society when we see this kind of stuff. So, but we're going to have more on the kind of on the KU issue on Monday. We're going to get to hear from Steve Oros and hear his story. And I guarantee you, when you hear what the university has put Steve Oros through, you are going to be as devastated and as shocked and as angry as I have been. So please tune into that. And then at 7 p.m. On Monday too. So that's going to get released early in the morning on 7 p.m. in a regular Out the Coop live slot. We're going to have just kind of an open phone session to kind of talk about that and some other things too as well. But there you go. Anything else going on in PA, Sean?
Not right now. I think we're going to be gearing up for a couple of the first audit or fraud or 2020 election scam.
Like next week?
Yeah, within the next week or so. So, I mean, it's happening. So,
audit time. It's audit time.
They want to replicate something that will make Arizona look like fucking peanuts. So,
strap in.
You know, we have all this money on the money tree for these audits, but we put $7 billion in the fucking rainy day fund.
Yeah, man.
So here we go.
At least we got our freedom. Well, there you go. All right. This is Kevin Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken. We're going to be back right after this quick break for to wrap it up in this week's Last Call.
I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in Two.
On this day in labor history, the year was 1932. That was the day the Progressive Miners of America wrapped up their founding convention in Gillespie, Illinois. Fed up with concessions and what they viewed as heavy-handed anti-democratic rule by United Mine Worker President John L. Lewis, Illinois miners met to break decisively. Area miners were active in radical politics, and many supported currents within the socialist and communist movements. That July, Lewis opened the contract and agreed to a 20% pay cut. Tens of thousands of miners were furious and threw up picket lines at mines throughout central and southern Illinois. In Franklin County, striking miners were assaulted, shot, and beaten by special deputies and strike-breaking thugs. Many miners thought Lewis had had a hand in the violence against them. Two miners were killed and hundreds more injured. By September 1st, 273 delegates representing 40,000 miners resolved to break from the UMWA, form a new union, and plan immediate negotiations with coal operators. They drafted a constitution emphasizing rank-and-file industrial democracy. A women's auxiliary was established with Agnes Bernas Wick as its head. It imbued union solidarity and leadership qualities among non-mining women. An enraged Lewis charged dual unionism, but the new PMA alleged they represented 90% of Illinois miners. The split gave rise to the Illinois Mine Wars. Years of shootings, bombings, and assaults became almost commonplace as both unions struggled for power. The PMA soon faced internal fighting as conservatives attempted to wrest leadership from many of the founders. Though the union never dominated the industry, it continued to represent thousands of Illinois miners throughout the 20th century.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back. This is Raging Chickens Out to Coop Podcast. It's the last call. We're here with Kev Mahoney and Sean Kitchen. One quick correction. I was reading quickly before the break, so I made a mistake, and I want to just correct it. My mistake was I mentioned Linda had become a new patron, and Linda had not become a new patron. So that's my bad. It was coming up. I got another notification. So my bad. My apologies. So we have – but still, this thanks goes out to Steve and Dan for becoming patrons over the past week. So once again, Sean, what do you got going on for the weekend, man? What do you got on for, I don't know, news, blues, or happy news, or I don't know.
What's happening? Labor Day weekend. So Capone is going to be happening this weekend. And then there's going to be an action.
Wait, what's going to happen this weekend?
Capone out in Harrisburg.
Gotcha.
Capone is a festival that happens every year. I think it's a Greek festival, or I think there's some Native American ties to it as well. There's going to be a Native American powwow that's going to be happening in the baseball stadium. And then there's going to be other like food trucks, festivals, art tents, all that type of stuff up there. So weather's going to be amazing. The river's not going to be too high. We'll be able to do that. So there'll be attractions there.
Mask off and have fun.
Yep. Exactly.
Let it rip. Roll the dice.
Harrisburg held concerts. Harrisburg's holding outdoor concerts.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'll be going to one of them in a couple weeks. So hopefully it still happens. I mean, we're just like, yeah. I don't know. I mean, but the thing about with the concerts are they're requiring everyone to show their vaccination cards on the way in. So,
which is good. I mean, you know, again, look, yeah, I'm just kind of going into the extreme, I know, but it's like, you know, the best that we can do right now is to do the best that we can, right? I mean, and that means making sure that we get vaccinated, making sure that we're kind of like following the regulations and all this other kind of stuff. And, you know, and again, like you said, like outdoor concerts where people have proof of vaccination and things like this is your kind of best case scenario. Is it 100% safe? No, it's not. Right. However, right. Nothing is 100% safe. Right. So what you do is you do the
best.
Thank
you, Joe Rogan.
No. But it's, you know, it's true. There's nothing 100%, right? So
I know there's perceived risk.
But this is precisely the problem, right? This is why we all get here. People tend to see everything in terms of black and white, right? When it's like, and I have this affliction too as well, right? But, you know, it's like legitimate, like you want to be as safe as possible, right? If you wear your seatbelt in the car, right, your risk of dying in a car crash is lower. Does it mean that you're immune from car crashes? No. Right. And this is just like here. Yes, it's going to be true is that you can vaccinate. The very least we can make sure is that you don't die. Right. Or don't end up in a hospital on a ventilator for a month. Right. That's a good thing. And if you're going to go to a concert, go to an outdoor concert. Right. You know, stand away from people a little bit. Right. Get out of this. Don't go in the mosh pit, for Christ's sake.
I can't wait till I go to the Menzingers concert in December. And that won't be outside.
Well, it's good knowing you, Sean. Just kidding.
I'll be eligible for my booster by then. So
yeah. I should be eligible soon. I gotta actually look at that and see if I can schedule that soon, because the way it's looking at Kutztown right now is not good. But I am gonna get away for kind of like a day and a half or so. We're gonna go up the mountains, make a little trip, kind of spend a little bit of a Labor Day weekend, just you know, doing a little relaxing with the family. I'm gonna be spinning up some D&D campaign stuff. Working on my own kind of homebrew campaign in addition to running this other one with my son and his friends. My daughter and their friends. So that's been a lot of fun. It's been my main distraction. I've been continuing my listening to and watching of the Dungeon Run, which is, you know, you can find it on YouTube, but it's also on caffeine.tv. That's been just a whole lot of fun, and it's actually, you know, it's been keeping me relatively grounded, to have just something completely, you know, away from this stuff for a bit in kind of in terms of my mental space. Cause I tend to focus a little bit too much and obsess a little too much about this stuff all the time. And that's not good for my own health. Right. And everybody who's around me. So, but So it's cool. Be rolling D20s, man. That's what I'm looking forward to. I'm working on a new character right now. I got some great backstory stuff going on. It's great.
Nice.
Yeah, I think when I get that going, I'm going to have to share bits and pieces of it in last calls for each week. So just good. So cool. You got anything else kind of cool going on for the weekend?
No, nothing really too much. Just enjoying the weekend. You know, enjoying the time off, enjoying the nice weather. Might get outside, walk around, try to work on that tan a bit.
There you go.
End of the fall.
Get your fall tan going.
Yeah, but I mean, that's about it.
There you go.
It's just the weather's really nice right now, so it's just getting out and enjoying it.
Yeah, it's beautiful. It feels a little bit weird, like after that kind of crazy storm, but the weather is, I mean, you know, then
it feels like it just took all the fucking moisture away.
Yeah, like yesterday I walked outside. I was like, oh my God. Like I felt almost guilty feeling so good about being outside because it was, you know, especially because, I mean, you know, literally down my street, the road is ripped up. The bridges are turned out, right? There are people that got, you know, luckily, as far as I know at this point, nobody lost their lives, right? But there were people that got stuck in the floods. You know, in Percy, they've got the old historic covered bridge got ripped off its foundation. The damage is pretty, you know, Free Will Brewing. That's what I wanted to mention. It's like Free Will here. Oh my God, they got wrecked.
I couldn't believe that when I saw the photos.
Oh my God, they're sour cellar, right? They literally had a picture of it, and like there's a stairway that goes down, right? And I've been down there. And literally you look at the stairway, there's one step down and then it's water. The entire, like to the ceiling was filled with water. They reopened, they have a reopening today too as well. You know, they're going to giving away free burgers, and they tried to kind of, we're taking a bunch of stuff that they had just canned and are chilling it up to kind of make it available for everybody. But that's going to be some major cleanup, man. So, you know, my heart goes out to those folks who are kind of working so hard to make that there in the center of the community, but holy crap. The devastation was pretty crazy. And, you know, and I hope that anybody's listening today is like, you know, you made it through okay, and your family made it through okay, and your friends. I know that, you know, people are struggling with right now with everything from being without power to, you know, still having floods in their basement. I look at those folks down in Philly and I just, man, I'm just, my heart goes out to you too as well. Let's get to it. Anyways, this is Kevin Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken. Sean, man, great seeing you as always, and we'll talk to you soon.
Enjoy your holiday weekend.
Yeah. You do the same.
Enjoy Labor Day.
Yes, indeed. This is Kevin Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken. We want to thank you for tuning in once again. Thanks to Jamie. Thanks to Emily for the chat. And we'll be back next week. Remember, on Monday, you're going to get the Steve Oros interview, and you're going to Out to Coop Live. Next Wednesday, Cyril is back for the Wednesday show. And we'll be back right in this seat next Friday. See ya!